grace and faith were used on us, not by us.
The gospel of grace.
You are the thing that was in the mind of God.
The gospel of peace.
This plan was put together by God and Jesus before the creation of anything else.
That was Mike Williams, and this is the Gospel Revolution.
Welcome to the Gospel Revolution Powercast for Friday, July 27, 2018, broadcasting from the home of redemptionism, where we love every train of thought visiting our station of freedom. We're coming to you from the Gospel Revolution studios right here in Eva, Alabama, where we say that a text without a context is a pretext for a subtext. But right now, from Palm Beach Gardens, Florida, with more consistent, persistent, repetitive CPR of the gospel, is the president and founder of the Gospel Revolution, Michael Williams. I can see him in the background. He's nodding his head. He just can't wait to say a word. See, you can hear him there. And if I keep talking, he won't even get a word in edgewise, which should be a lot of fun for the next hour. Let me tell you an interesting story about my grandmother. How are you, Mike?
I am good. In spite of current difficulties, I am wonderful. And I am speaking about you.
Of course. I'm one of the many vicissitudes of life.
All is well. And looking forward to this redo. And it's going to be better. You know, we said better when we did the last one. So,
Michael's referring to the fact that we had a disaster last week. So we put to air, it was a win-win all around, really, because we had I was just saying to Michael, I have this dream where one day I'm going to wake up in a permanent studio. It's going to be big. It's going to be spacious. And up on the wall is going to be a big red button. And every time I pull, and the buttons are going to be the size of one of those cartoon comic buttons, you know, huge. And up on the wall it'll be, and I'll have to use both hands to pull that button down. And when I do, all the lights will go on and all the connections will be made and nothing will change from week to week and everything will work.
Mm.
Well, last week it didn't work that way. So the dream is still the dream. And it was a win-win all around, really, because you got to hear the redemption pillar of the seven pillars of wisdom, and we got to not exactly have a holiday, but, well, here we are back to do it again even better than what we recorded last week.
Here we are.
So, Michael, having whetted everyone's appetite, shall we just dig in?
Let's do it. This is the follow-up program from the show that we did on 1 Corinthians chapter 9. We got so many comments from that. I know I did personally. People loved it. They appreciated it. They saw clarity in this that they had never seen before. So, we were very happy about that show, and this was and is the follow-up to that, because that's 1 Corinthians, and Paul's making a case for the fact that Peter and James do things this way, such as nine ways to coerce money out of people. And Paul said in two places during that 15 verses of 1 Corinthians 9, he said, but I don't do this because it hinders the gospel, as James and Peter are doing. They are hindering the gospel. And then at the end of it, he said, rather than do this, I would just rather die. People really understood when I came, we came to the end of that show, and I said, I really found my heart on this. And I got some of the most wonderful comments, Don, as have been in Pledge Drive, still in Pledge Drive.
How's it going, mate?
Well, it's been going good. And, you know, the folks have said, you know, Mike, I know you said you found your heart. He said, but they've said, you know, you've always done this way. You've always handled the collection of funds this way. But by finding my heart, I didn't mean that I found out how to do it. I found out what I'd already been doing, And it was affirmed by Paul, you know.
Did you have a chance to trot out the old don't muzzle the ox thing? You know, I mean, that's more of a defensive one. One of the offensive ones, or one, you know, one that you can really get into people with, is the one about, hey, whoever buys a cow and doesn't drink the milk. So listen, listen, you're my cow and I want to drink your milk. How much are you going to cough up?
Yeah, we feed you. You know, we give you the cow food and everything, and so.
So don't muzzle the ox.
It's time. It's time to milk the cow. So.
Yeah, here I am. Hey, hear that phone ringing? Ring, ring.
But it has been. It's been good. We definitely need more funds than what we have raised, but our not only have our very faithful regulars stepped up, but we have a couple of new contributors, and I think that we have increased. I was trying to figure it up yesterday, and I know we have at least an extra, well, not extra, it has replaced the 500 that we lost almost instantaneously over the last 4 months, but we have regained about 400 of that.
Oh, well.
Yeah, as far as monthly increases.
So can I start banking my checks again?
No. Not until we have $20,000 a month coming in can you bank your checks. So.
Boy, it's an early grave for me, family.
well, at least a poorer route to the grave, right?
Well, yeah, it's slower than it was, but. I got to feed my wife. I've got to set off my donations to the orphan homeless boys choir of Nashville. Remember, I'm still supporting them. They even sing on the show from now on, from time to time. Little do you think of these people. Oh yeah, my dog Lassie.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the look on your face when you do this. You just go, yeah, rave on, boy, rave on. We'll get to the show sooner or later.
So, yes, thank you, guys. Those of you that have participated, are participating, and will participate in the rest of this month in the pledge drive. You know, we used to have it on kind of a restricted time of about 2 weeks, but I find that I really enjoy it more if we can spread it out over a little bit longer period of time. I think this will be a total of 3 weeks by the time that I get this finished up. And we had a couple of folks that soon after the very 1st of July, I was in contact with them, and they just said, hey, you got pledge drive starting soon, right? Yeah, I said, yeah, it is. So they went ahead and started even earlier than that. So we do appreciate it. It has been a lifesaver. And we're getting ready for Calgary, Alberta. My goodness, the weeks just keep flying by until the next thing I know, I'm going to be boarding the jet for Calgary, Alberta. I'm looking forward to this. And Owen is taking over the advertising for this meeting. We'll be doing a brand new format. Instead of newspaper, we are going through social media. Owen seems to know how to do that. Our expense for advertising will drop drastically, but our exposure will increase manyfold by direct communication and reaching people of certain demographics. And in certain geographic areas. So we're looking forward to that and seeing what Owen is able to accomplish in getting more folks in here.
So without any further ado, why don't we press on into the second in a series of what may be three, but certainly of two, on godly giving. And we're going to see what godly giving is. We're going to see what godly giving is not. We may spread this over three podcasts, in which case the next one we're going to give you a summary of everything that we've shared in the first two. Plus, we may even share with you some living examples of how to manipulate people for money.
Ooh.
But right now we're going to dive into what are we going to dive into, mate?
We're going to dive into moreover. It sounds like somebody's calling their dog. Yeah.
Moreover. Hey, moreover. I ate a dog. I shouldn't tell that story. It was with a Chinese friend of mine.
Please don't.
And I couldn't. I couldn't really finish the meal. I had to have less rover, actually, which is what made me think of it. No, truly. I was outside some – I was on an island called Lantau Island, just off Hong Kong, and there was a restaurant. And like in Australia, the milko, he drops all these boxes of milk for the restaurant. Behind this restaurant was a couple of crates of living dogs. It was I'll never forget it.
Oh.
And with that family, moreover.
Just the same as it's important to read 2 Corinthians chapter 8 and 9, it's just as important to read 2 Corinthians if you have read 1 Corinthians. There's so much follow-up to Paul's letter that he wrote in 1 Corinthians that if you don't read 2 Corinthians, you're going to go away with some false assumptions about Paul's teachings. One of the most powerful examples, I wish I remembered who it was, and if you're listening, please let me know, but somebody called me and told me that they had said, well, what about where Paul said, you know, he's talking about this man who in 1 Corinthians, he tells them to do everything but cut his thumbs off, you know, and send him out of the camp. You know, he really does give some instructions to deal with him very harshly and disassociate. This is where every church gets their excommunication rules from, is from this 1 Corinthians episode with the man who was found to be having a relationship with his stepmother. We've gone through this, so you'll just have to go back in previous shows. But then Paul brings up the subject about what he told them in 1 Corinthians about this gentleman. And Paul says, I said all this to test you. And it was just shocking to me that that was there. It shows up as the word prove, I think. You get a good taste of what he was proving them in, because he tells them, why are you treating this man this way?
Mm.
What's wrong with you? And it's like, well, what's wrong with us is you told us to do it. But you see, Paul wanted people to think for themselves, even if they had to think through what he said. What a magnificent example of testing or proving to see whether or not people were thinking for themselves. And a great example of reading a little bit further. You know, he taught about grace. He shared grace. He shared equality. And then when this guy showed up as having a fault of having a relationship with his stepmother, he's to be shunned. He's to be excommunicated. Not to eat with him, nothing. And then Paul's drastic reversal of his position on this and begins to tell everyone, you know, what's wrong with you? Why are you, you need to entreat him like a brother. Treat him like a brother. Don't treat him the way, basically, I told you. And, what Paul is basically saying is, by doing what I said, I proved you hadn't been listening to me. Don, we recap that for the folks, and especially bring in that story to explain. It just gives us such a wonderful insight to Paul's teaching and his ability. He wanted to know what the people thought, and he would even say things that he himself was not in agreement with, to find out whether his teachings had taken effect or not. I've shared the story of another friend of mine who'd started teaching on grace, and I've shared this story before, but it bears repeating at this point for sure, how that he had taught grace to this church for 3 nights and was speaking on the fourth night. and just decided he was going to just set all the teaching on grace aside and say, you know, I just finished all this, but if you think you can get by with, and if you think that God is going to wink, and if you think that you're going to get something from God if you're living in sin, if you think, and he just went down this litany, and he said, of the four nights, that was the most enthusiastic night. People were coming out of their chairs. No one stood in their chairs, stood up from their chairs and cheered and applauded about grace. They were moved by it. But when he started teaching legalism, they came out of their seats. Yes. Amen, brother. And so he did that for a while and then finally just stopped and said, you know, he said, I've been teaching you guys grace three nights. I get up here and teach legalism once, and it's as though you've heard nothing about grace whatsoever. And I know that had to be a shocking experience for these folks. I understand the sentiment of the guy doing this to test them. And that's really what Paul says he did to the church at Corinth with dealing with this guy. He says, you know, I wrote this to prove you. Gospel Revolution. So what we're going to do now is go into 2 Corinthians chapter 8 and 9. And again, you've got to understand the power of 2 Corinthians and what Paul has taught. 2 Corinthians chapter 1 and chapter 2, talking about his ministry and what he's going through. Then in chapter 3 is this powerful chapter about that the law has been destroyed, it's been done away with, put away. Every way he could say the law is non-existent is very clear. Going down into chapter 4 is where he says that we have this treasure in earthen vessels. Then in chapter 5, absent from the bodies to be present with the Lord, we've covered that. So that's all of this stuff that has come before, just in touching on it. Don, just for a minute, this almost may be a sideshow here, but I think it would be good for the folks. There's a couple of points that you have made in the past that just became very real to me as I started explaining it to someone else recently.
You mean like put up my wages?
No, I don't pay any attention to that.
Oh, okay.
The thing that I'm that has really been very helpful was you finding the origins of two words, and that is antinomianism and heresy. And two words that had to be literally created to withstand the teachings of, at the time, universalism. And what an incredible understanding that is, that as Catholicism began to take hold, that these terms to be able to deal with that actually were created terms. And I was sharing with this individual that antinomianism, while it's been what I've been accused of for the last 30 years, the term doesn't exist. And they quote it as though it is an absolute Greek word, and it's not there. And what Paul did teach is anomianism, to be apart from the law, it's just none at all, being asexual, or it's the very same way that we translate it into the English language when the letter A precedes the main part of the word. So anomian, and nomian being law, means apart from law. And we are apart from law, but we are not anti. They're the ones, Christianity is the ones that's anti-nomian. They are against God's law because they dissect it and they break it up. And these parts are important and these parts we ignore. We respect all parts of God's law. We agree with every segment of God's law. And then we agree that Christ nailed it all to his tree. So that word and the word heresy, because it came up when we were talking about somebody speaking about, something, Mike, they call you a heretic. And I said, well, everybody calls everybody a heretic that doesn't believe. And that's where this discussion came from, was that, these two words.
That doesn't believe like they do.
That does not believe like they do. So, and why is that important? Because the things that we're sharing with you about giving, folks, these terms are important. We do not realize how created words in the process of Christianity, created words, if we only had to deal with the words that are actually there in the Bible and the things that are in the Bible, we win hands down.
You think about it, the word rapture.
Yeah, another one.
You know, that was only invented 150 years ago. The word Calvin, Calvinist, or the word Armenian, or the word, the phrases and thoughts of saved today, lost tomorrow, once saved, always saved. These are things that are just, they've inventions that have been raised along the way, haven't they, Mike?
Oh, they really have been. The sovereignty.
Beautiful one. Yeah. Not even mentioned in the Bible.
Not mentioned. If we got to stick with the Bible, let's just stick with the Bible. Let's forget about what part's scripture and what part's not. If we were just able to get Christianity to agree to dispense of all the created words that they use as scripture that aren't even in the Bible anywhere. We win hands down every time. There's just no possible way that Christianity wins this, no matter how succinctly the doctrine is laid out, no matter how they lay it out, no matter how they, and then this will happen and then that'll happen and then the things are going to come and sting and then that's going to happen. Oh, man.
You do know there's another fourth blood moon coming up, don't you?
Oh, well, I wouldn't doubt it.
Yep. And after it, John Hagee will just keep on making money.
He will indeed. You know, it's just, oh, my. So anyway, the gospel revolution, our number one goal is to help you think for yourself. Now, we're going to present to you the things that we understand, the things in context that we have found. But it's still up to you to make up your own mind. Don't ever just accept what somebody says. Now, you may not be a great Bible researcher, but still, out of what you hear us say and everybody else says, it is up to you. Regardless of the degree of your own research that you do, you have to make up your own mind. You have to decide what it is you are convinced is truth.
You know, we can study the Greek out and... Yeah, we've got a few people in the GR who know what they're doing in the Greek. We can follow the historical timeline, and we got people who are interested in that. But you know, I think I'm right in saying this. The most effective research you can do is to read in context.
Mm-hmm.
Because see, context is always going to bear it out. It's like when Jesus says, and I, if I be lifted up, I will draw all men unto me. Well, the word men is nowhere there. The context is judgment.
Yes.
And the word men has been added by translators later. And it's very hard for us to read in context because our minds have already been molded and processed by decades sometimes of teachings of religion.
Mm-hmm.
I really think, Mike, that... and you're the one who seems to wake the world up to this, that contextual reading is possibly just the smartest way that anyone can research.
I have found it to be. I used to teach by looking up Greek words and then applying the definition of the Greek word to every place I found the Greek word, which supported what I was wanting to teach. So I do know that simply knowing a Greek word is not the way to find the truth. Adding Greek to context, it is just so helpful. But it doesn't make any difference if you know Greek from Alpha to Omega. It doesn't make any difference how much Greek you know. Greek, English, Hebrew, German, it doesn't make any difference which one you're going to read. If you don't read in context, it isn't going to make a bit of difference at all because you'll still add your presumed position and lace these things together. Man, I was so good. It was like lacing up shoes to me. You know, I'd take that shoelace and put it through that eye and through that eye and then crisscross and back and forth and over here and back to there and then tie that shoe up at the top. And man, you were going to go running. I guarantee you everybody in the room was going to go running for sure by the time I finished. But I did not know that the way I was studying was flawed. Anybody who does not read something in context, I don't care whether you're studying Shakespeare, geology, geography. It doesn't make any difference what discipline you are studying. If you are not studying, if you are depending on a text to help teach you so that you can be a good architect, if you don't read what the textbook says in context, you're never going to be able to make up your mind for yourself as to what kind of architecture you're going to be involved in. Until you get it in its context, you can learn every term about architecture that there is to know. But until you understand it in a context or in a framework, there's nothing you're going to be able to do with it. Basically, religion is anything and everything out of context, to where that you can prove your point. Now, I am not always successful at doing this. But I tell you what, we've got folks out there that they'll point it out to me in a heartbeat. We just got a letter from Vic Dobrennan. We'll cover it another time. That pointed out to me, and I think he's right on this point that I went into on the teaching recently. I was excited that he pointed out because I always felt funny reading through it because it felt like that it maybe wasn't exactly right, but I didn't know anything else. But see, even myself is, I include myself in that we have so many things that we've been told in the past that we imply over what we are now reading. And I'm telling you, it still happens to me. And sometimes others have seen through those things and they'll point it out. And I'm so very grateful for those things. Now, all of that, what does that have to do with the teaching today? Everything. Because we have this powerful comparison between Paul's teaching in 1 Corinthians and Paul's teaching in 2 Corinthians, beginning in chapter 8 and going through chapter 9. We're going to zip through this pretty quickly. We're not going to beleaguer points, because I think the full context of this is more important than stopping and figuring out every detail of this. So, Don, you want to begin reading there for us? Or?
You bet. Moreover, brethren, we want you to know about the grace of God bestowed on the churches of Macedonia, how that in a great trial of affliction, the abundance of their joy, even in their deep poverty, abounded unto the riches of their liberality.
Okay, let's stop right there, Don, just to begin with. When I first taught on this more than 20, 25 years ago and showed people that there was a grace of giving, you know, everything that we do, everything we did before was based in law, so it's all legalistic. And now everything we do, we understand grace. We've come out from under the law. So everything we do should be an extension of the grace that we have received. And that's what Paul's saying here, is that these folks began to give, obviously not under the coercion of what he had just taught them against in the in 1 Corinthians chapter 9. But here he is saying now that this one doesn't have anything to do with law. Remember, he cited even Moses agreed with him. He said, this isn't just me saying it. This is Moses said, muzzle not the ox that treads out the corn. But he's saying now this giving is connected to grace. The other giving was connected to law. This giving is connected to grace. And he's identifying that one group of people really connected with this way of sharing their financial resources with Paul's ministry to be supportive of it. Paul was ministering to these people, And in this, this is the way that Paul was very inspired, that these people were inspired. So Paul was inspired about the way they were inspired to help him help the people that he was helping. And let's continue reading here.
He says, "I was there and saw it for myself. They gave offerings of whatever they could, far more than they could afford, pleading for the privilege of helping out in the relief of poor Christians."
Mm-hmm.
"This was totally spontaneous, entirely their own idea, and caught us completely off guard." Now, I'm reading from the Message, but we can read from the King Jimmy, and from time to time I'll switch back and forwards because sometimes it's just easy to understand.
Mm-hmm.
"This was totally spontaneous, entirely their own idea, caught us completely off guard. What explains it was that they had first given themselves unreservedly to God and to us. The other giving simply flowed out of the purposes of God working in their lives."
Okay, now, let's go back because there's one part of this that I want to strongly disagree with the translation there. It says, "And take upon us," in verse 4, "the fellowship of the ministering to the saints." Now, Christians is a sect of a group out of which is called Christianity, which there's only a certain percentage of the world that is a part of that. And Paul says this is the ministering to the saints, which the saints is not, the saints ain't Christians. It doesn't mean the Christians ain't saints, but
that is good, because the Message says pleading for the privilege of helping out in the relief of poor Christians. But it doesn't say poor Christians. It says the saints.
Yes.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, and it is the saints. And you see how that many of these translations, even though, like the Message, I really get a lot out of it. I get a lot out of all the translations. There's many times when I'm studying, I'll check and see what all of them say, because you just never know when somebody's going to shine a light on something. Even though you might disagree with everything else that they do, there could be a portion of light. This is one part where they have taken the position in the Message that being a saint means being a Christian. And that is just a completely incorrect view, and it is an incorrect translation.
That's
also.
That's an excellent example of translating the Bible through your own pre-existing theology.
Mm-hmm. So as Don continues through this, I know that is one place. I don't know that we'll find others that are just totally disagreeable with the Greek, because that's not just disagreeable with the King James Version. That's disagreeable with the Greek.
Yes, it is.
All right. So what we're learning here is just simply a giving that comes out of the outflow of what you have and who you are. Not based on, now he has mentioned that these folks gave more than what they could, but you're going to find out later that Paul does not recommend that at all. Now, they were very zealous about giving, and so they started giving way beyond their means,
and
as it's very clear that they did.
And also they were giving to people poorer than themselves.
Yes, indeed. And to the ministry of the saints. Therefore, as you abound in faith and knowledge and all of this stuff, as you abound in all of these and every other subject, he said this grace that that is manifested by the freeness of giving to help in any situation. I would expand that to just, it doesn't make any difference what you're giving to. If those dollars are going to help a situation, I think that's a grace that is there, that is that people are experiencing out of their abundance that they give, whether it's UNICEF or the American Way or Red Cross or the Red Crescent, whatever it is, if it is indeed helping out with the cause, whatever the organization claims they are helping, if they're truly doing that and you want to help, then there's a generosity there in your heart to do it, then do it.
Mm. So, verse 6 of chapter 8 of 2 Corinthians. That's what prompted us to ask Titus to bring the relief offering to your attention so that what was so well begun could be finished up. You do so well in so many things. You trust God. You're articulate. You're insightful. You're passionate. You love us. Now do your best in this too. I'm not trying to order you around against your will, but by bringing in the Macedonians' enthusiasm as a stimulus to your love, I am hoping to bring the best out of you.
Yeah, that's very, very good. Paul's making sure that he's saying, now I'm using a little bit of manipulation here, but I'm not doing it from a legalistic standpoint. I'm using a little bit of manipulation here to influence you to give by telling you about how generous somebody else has been. Now that's just gut level honest. You know, what else can you say? That we tell how much somebody else has given to motivate somebody else. You know what? We could tell Paul, you know, Paul, we really appreciate that you do that, but we don't do that. So now I'm not trying to get one-upmanship on Paul, but see, just because it says that Paul said this for this reason doesn't mean that we're going to do it. Because I don't want, we never compare people's giving. That's what Paul is doing here. So you see, I could take this. I want you to get the heart of this more than anything else today. Teaching and showing you what Paul did not use, I could then turn to 2 Corinthians chapter 8, show you what Paul did use, and thereby validate telling you what somebody else gave to try to use a little bit of a twist here to get you to give more because somebody else gave more. Now, Paul did it. Paul was unashamed to do it. I'm not ashamed of the fact that Paul did it. But I can tell you, we don't do that. And I can tell you, we're not going to do that. There was a time when we did have, but it still had nothing to do with, the best I remember, we did not tell people who it was. But there was a brief period of time several years ago that we had a couple of folks that wanted to contribute a fairly large sum to the ministry, but they wanted to do it in matching funds. And they said, I will give up to X amount of dollars if others will contribute X amount of dollars also. I am willing to give this much and up to this amount. If that amount, whatever amount comes in up to this amount, I will match that. And we did put that out there. And it was fun and it seemed to have worked, actually, to tell you the truth. It did inspire some people to give. But just because Paul used this method, and that's certainly not anything about comparing, you know, who has given what, therefore, you know, we're trying to provoke you to give more. So, again, folks, you have to follow your heart, and that's what we're doing. I don't know anything else to do. You see, there is nothing in me. Now, Paul was bold enough in where he stood to say, hey, I'm going to tell you something. Man, the Macedonians, they are giving so great, and I'm telling you what, it's unbelievable the amount they gave. And not only did they give, they gave beyond what they were able to do. And now the reason I'm telling you this is so that you'll kick in more. That's literally what Paul has said here.
Yep.
But I will not say that to you. I appreciate what Paul has done, but we cannot go around advocating that you function from your heart and then find a technicality like this, if one would call it a technicality. This is the way Paul did it, so why shouldn't we do it that way? Because it don't feel right. That's the only thing I can tell you, folks. It just doesn't feel right. I've been on the phone with no one and told them what somebody else did to try to provoke them to give more. It has never happened. We've never had a PowerCast where that happened either. I just wanted to stop and point this out to you, that even though Paul said this is the way he did it, this is one point where Paul did it, and we ain't going to do it that way. So continue reading here for us, Don.
I'm switching back to the King Jimmy for the next verse, verse 9, simply because so many of us have heard this verse so often that the moment it comes out of my mouth, you'll recognize it. For you know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, that though he was rich, yet for your sakes he became poor, that you through his poverty might be rich. I can't tell you the number of times that I was taught that I would be financially rich through Jesus' poverty.
Yeah, and you would become absolutely rich if you became poor giving.
Absolutely. I'm firmly convinced that's why the widow who gave a last mite was poor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Convinced of that. And herein, I give my advice, for this is expedient for you, who have begun before not only to do, but also to be forward a year ago. In other words, a year ago you started this, and I want to see you finish it properly. Now, therefore, perform the doing of it, as there was a readiness to will, so there may be a performance also out of that which you have. In other words, the time has come to dig into your pockets and to follow through on what you decided a year ago you wanted to do. For if there be first a willing mind, it's accepted according to what a man has and not according to what he has not.
So poignant. We must stop here for a moment. Now, even though Paul has explained that, yes, this is what the Macedonians did, and yes, they did give beyond what they had the ability to do, he says, but what giving is all about is the ability to give what you have and not what you don't have. He said that you started doing this a year ago, and now, and you'll see that this bears out as we go through. What Paul is suggesting here is that, I think this is basically what we do, and that is monthly contributions that are spread out over a year. Paul is telling people, so that you can give out of that which you have and not out of what you don't have, don't wait a year before you do it. Start beginning to allocate toward that. And as I said, you'll see here later, that's exactly what Paul is saying, is that you begin to set this aside. Begin to set it aside. To keep this from being something that is, you said you were going to do it a year ago, and now it's time to do it. While you could have budgeted this in over a year, now you don't have it. This is just Paul speaking out of the wisdom of dealing with money and what you purpose in your own heart that you're going to give. Stay within the limits of what you have. And let me tell you something. I can come up with $1,000 a year to contribute to just about anything. But I can't do it at the end of the year because I never have $1,000 extra to put in. But if I start putting in $80, $85 a month, I can budget that in. And over a period of a year, 12 months, then I'm going to have the full $1,000 that I have decided from my own heart that I want to give. That's all Paul's talking about here.
And notice that he says that you give according to that which you have, not according to that which you have not. I've been in meeting after meeting after meeting where they took up building funds. And I've even heard pastors say, and if you give into the house of the Lord, he'll help you buy that house that you want.
Yeah.
And what did people do? They hauled out their credit cards and gave money that they didn't have. That's why it's called credit.
Mortgage their homes.
Oh, God. Oh, man. Some of the stories, the heartbreak stories, experiences that I've known will just...
I talked to an elderly woman. This was Wilkerson. David Wilkerson, a highly revered minister crossing the switchblade, David Wilkerson, out of New York. I talked with a woman on the phone. This was my conversation with her. And she was elderly. The woman was in her 80s. And David Wilkerson had told them that Jesus was coming back and we needed this harvest money, and that if that they might as well sell their homes and give the money because Jesus was coming back. It was imminent. They weren't going to be needing it anyway. And she sold her home and gave the money to the church from the proceeds of her house. And now she was in the process of being kicked out of her house. And she'd approached David Wilkerson Ministries about returning the money to her because Jesus didn't come back and he would not even talk to her.
What a scumbag. Excuse me. What a holy, righteous, and perfect and sanctified scumbag. David, I have other reasons for kicking David Wilkerson to the curb, and yet he was so revered. My God, he was revered. Okay.
Yeah, and preached protection from the Lord, that angels surround you, and if your steps are right, God would always protect you. And about 5-6 years ago, David Wilkerson died in a car crash.
Boom, boom.
His wife was in the car, was very severely injured and did recover. And my understanding is continued on with injuries that she'll have to live with, but he was killed instantly.
But mate, come on. At least he died rich.
Yeah, isn't that important?
It's like the old saying, he who dies with the most toys still dies.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, back to this. Verse 13 of chapter 8, 2 Corinthians. For I mean not that other men be eased and you are burdened.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want other people to feel good because you feeling burdened. But by an equality, that now at this time your abundance may be a supply for their want, that their abundance also may be a supply for your want. You see, that there may be equality. Now, I want to read you that in the message because it's just that good. Your surplus matching their deficit, their surplus matching your deficit, in the end you come out even. For it is written, nothing left over to the one with the most, nothing lacking to the one with the least.
Mm-hmm. And Paul is talking about, of course, their funds that go in to minister to the people he was ministering to. He's saying, you know, folks, if you got a lot, why not give a lot? If you got little, well, just give a little. If you're kind of in the middle, do kind of in the middle giving. And that's really what this is all about. Now, let me tell you, we're not even going through this because we're telling you what we want you to do. We're going through this because you need to know what Paul taught about these things so you can make up your own mind.
And when you hear that televangelist, when you hear that Mike Murdoch, when you hear that Kenneth Copeland, when you hear these people saying, if you give, you'll get, when you hear this blab it and grab it, when you hear that, we want you far more than we want you to give to us. Now, we want you to give to us, but far more than that, we want you to know the BS, the unmitigated manipulation, the bait and switch, the carrot and stick. We want you to recognize that for what it is the next time you hear it, and that's why we're doing this.
Indeed. Don, what else does this say here?
Here it says, I thank God for giving Titus, I'm reading from verse 16, the same devoted concern for you that I have. He was most considerate of how we felt, but his eagerness to go to you and help out with this relief offering is his own idea. We're sending a companion along with him, somebody very popular in the churches for his preaching of the message. But there's far more to him than popularity. He's rock solid, trustworthy. The church has handpicked him to go with us as we travel about doing this work of sharing God's gifts to honor God as well as we can, making every precaution against scandal. We don't want anyone suspecting us of taking one penny of this money for ourselves.
Doing anything they can to avoid the appearance of scandal. Wow. You know, 5 years ago, we had five of the top prosperity gospel ministries that were under investigation by a member of Congress.
And only two of them responded.
Only two of them cooperated at all.
Yep. Only Joyce Meyer and Benny Hinn, but the other three, Creflo Dollar, Ken Copeland, and I think DePlantis, I can't be sure, they just said to the United States government, I'll rack off, hairy legs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He says, we're being as careful in our reputation with the public as in our reputation with God, and that's why we're sending another trusted friend along. Mm-hmm. He's proved his dependability many times over and carries on as energetically as the day he started. He's heard much about you and liked what he's heard, so much so that he can't wait to get there. Is this, now you're trawling along in the King Jimmy, mate. Is this pretty well what it's saying in the King Jimmy?
Yeah, it's doing absolutely the same. Now, let me tell you that what Paul was doing and what he was receiving funds for, let me tell you, I'm going to be very direct with you. It is not exactly what we take up funds for. Paul is taking up funds here to distribute to other people who are in poverty.
Well, that's what you do. You're taking up funds to pay me who's in poverty. I mean, geez, you put yourself down sometimes.
So what we are doing is a bit different than that. We are employed by Mike Williams Ministries, a nonprofit corporation, and we are doing everything that we can to reach people with the gospel. And in that, I want to acknowledge that what I am doing as far as taking up funds, we're doing this differently. Now, when we run into people that are in need, if we are able to do that, believe me, we do. It's a far cry from the comparison that I got from Norval Hayes when in Gatlinburg, Tennessee, one of our people that he was with, he had sent us all out witnessing while he stayed in his hotel room all day.
In Dollyland?
No, this is in Gatlinburg, Tennessee.
Yeah, Dollyland's in Gatlinburg. That's where Dolly has a...
No, she's in Pigeon Forge.
Maybe he wanted to see Dolly.
So one of the people came back. They had met somebody that was living out of their car. They had three or four kids. They were all in one car. All their possessions were in the car. And they'd heard Norval talk about prosperity and giving and giving and prosperity. And if you give, God will do this. And if you give, God will do that. And so he thought, man, he said, I know Brother Norval will help these guys. They were hungry and trying to make their way to another location because jobs had terminated. They had nothing. They weren't even able to get gas to get any further than what they were. Now, I was standing there when this happened. Norval was just stepping off of the elevator, and this guy stepped up to Norval, which is amazing that he was able to do, actually. I mean, these guys are more difficult to get to than the president himself. He stepped up to Norval, and briefly, Norval did stop just for a moment, and he explained to him the situation. And Norval said, let him use his faith to get it, like I did, and turned around on heel and walked off and went to speak in the meeting. And man, that stunned me. That stunned me, stunned me. Now, you've got ministries out there that are convincing you to give. Now, we're telling you why we take up these offerings.
Let me ask you this. He used his faith to get where he was, right?
Yes. So, according to him.
So, how much faith is involved in walking onto a platform and saying, if you give, you'll get? How much faith is involved?
Well, evidently, that's a whole ton of faith.
Okay. I'm sorry I interrupted. I thought I was going to learn a great truth there.
No, there's. I wish there was a little bit.
Sitting at the feet of the master, as you sat at the feet of the master. Yeah.
I wish there was something to learn out of it.
So you were saying you were shocked into silence.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And you've got to understand that And that's when the reality began to sink into me that the reason these guys take up money is to become rich, to promise you that you will become rich also if you do what they tell you to do, which they never do, just like Norval just proved. If giving is what causes all of this to happen, man, he should have unloaded a new Cadillac on this guy with a trailer behind it and filled it with food and gas money and said, now, oh, man, you think you're the winner here. God's going to give me back 100-fold. I get 100 Cadillacs, which 100-fold is not 100 times. Uh-huh. It's 100 times, 100 times, yes. And on and on.
But this is when you first realized it was less to this than met the eye.
Well, not the first time, but it was just another time that was just a slap in the face that the reality of this is there something really stinks about this. And to reassure you again, now we're not trying to pawn ourselves off on you as doing exactly what Paul was doing in trying to raise money for other poor folks. That is not what we're doing. We explain to you what we do with your funds, and it we tell you what it goes for. And we're honest with you about it, and you have chosen to give support to this so that we can get this gospel out, because we're in a time now where Christianity has corrupted the gospel so badly, the number one thing that needs to be done is not feeding poor people in this country. But what we're going for is the equality, not of people financially, but the equality of all people spiritually. This is a knowledge that the whole world is starving to death for, absolutely starving to death. So are we feeding the hungry? Yes, on this level of understanding the gospel and on this level of equality. You see, Paul was doing this for the sake of equality. Why are we doing it? For the sake of equality. It's for the same reason, just a little different application here. And we want to make sure that you understand that these verses are applying only in the aspect that the issue that we're dealing with is equality. The subject Paul was dealing with here, with all honesty, was equality. But it was a financial equality for sure.
So let's finish up this chapter. Verse 23, I don't need to say anything further about Titus. We've been close associates in this work of serving you for a long time. The brothers who travel with him are delegates from churches, a real credit to Christ. Show them what you're made of. The love I've been talking up in the churches, let them see it for themselves. So this chapter, we've just finished this chapter 8 of 2 Corinthians, could be summarized as him saying to the Corinthians, okay, you made a pledge a year ago. Now it's time to follow through on that. And the people we're sending are people who are above reproach, and we're sending them so that you will have no questions in your mind that this is a good pledge for a good cause.
Mm-hmm.
And above suspicion.
Above suspicion, and no appeals to for you to contribute beyond what you have the ability to do.
Beautiful.
No appeal at all. Beautiful. Even though the Macedonians did it. Now, see, Paul could have used that. The Macedonians gave way beyond that. And now it's up to you to give beyond. And I did that when I first read these verses. That's the way I used it, Don. But Paul didn't use it that way. He said, yes, they did do that. But my recommendation still is give within your means. Yes, the church at Macedonia gave beyond their means because that was what was in their heart to do. But as far as sound advice, I am not going to spiritualize what they did and now tell you, well, see, the church at Macedonia is now the standard for all of us to go by. This brother laid down his life, therefore you got to lay down your life. And this brother did this. This brother gave his home away, so shouldn't you give your home away? I gave my home away too. But I did it because I fully out of my heart. I truly wanted to do this. And
I know you back then? Jeez.
Well, a lot of people who did know me and did benefit from my generosity have nothing good to say about me to this day. So believe me, it doesn't benefit you whatsoever as far as popularity is concerned.
That's something.
They still attend the church that wouldn't help them, but they criticize me who did help them.
Well, sounds like the human condition, doesn't it? Verse, okay, 2 Corinthians, if I'm moving you along faster than you want, don't
worry.
Chapter
9, we've got 15 more verses to go, so let's hit it.
If I wrote it any more on this relief offering for the poor Christians, I'd be repeating myself.
And again, for the...
saints. Oh,
yes.
Lord, that's a good catch on your part, Mike. That is a great catch. For as touching the ministering to the saints, it is superfluous for me to write to you anymore. Oh, man, I'm going to keep reading the message. You're going to keep pulling us up and letting us know how close it is to the original. I know you're on board and ready to go. I've been bragging about you all through Macedonia province, telling them Achaia province has been ready to go on this since last year. Your enthusiasm by now has spread to most of them. Now, so he was saying to them what Macedonia did, and he said to Macedonia what Achaia did, and he's playing one against the other, isn't he?
Yeah, he's playing one off the other here. But he did say there's a zeal, and Paul is trying to capitalize on this zeal. I don't blame him. You know, he's trying to bring equality to folks. So there is a zeal that has broken out about giving.
And zeal or enthusiasm has been known to wane. So now he's going over to where he sees a flame and he's throwing some gasoline on it.
and we will do the same if we get the opportunity to.
Oh, yeah. You know, the other day I was speaking with a gospel revolutionary, and we were talking about Marcel Rose and the Gospel Revolution Radio, and I said, look, he gave me his banking details, but I can't make head nor tail of it, and right now I'm kind of a little bit tight. And he said, send me the banking details and I'll take care of it. That is a little bit like what Paul's talking about here. Just give from your heart. Mm-hmm. Follow your heart. Now, I'm sending the brothers to make sure you're ready, as I said you would be, so my bragging won't turn out to be just so much hot air. If some Macedonians and I happened to drop in on you and found you weren't prepared, we'd all be pretty red-faced. You and us for acting so sure of ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So to make sure there will be no slip-ups, I've recruited these brothers as an advance team to get you and your promised offering all ready before I get there. I want you to have all the time you need to make this offering in your own way. You can see again how he's saying, this is you following your heart, and I want to give you, I want to max you out on having all the time you need to make this offering in your own way. I don't want anything forced or hurried at the last minute.
Yeah.
Now, you might say that Paul was simply being a good businessman.
He was helping them manage how to do what they wanted to do.
Yes.
He said, now, I know what you want to do. I know your heart's in the right place. I know what you decided to do, but here's some words of advice as to how to accomplish what you decided you wanted to do. He's going with what they have made the decision to do and just simply saying, you know, evidently Paul was a good manager, and he says, I'm just trying to help you manage how to do what you say you want to do.
So like Glenn Klein is a life coach, Paul here is being a budgeting coach.
Yeah, he's just kind of coaching them through finding out first what was in their heart to do. And he is kind of pitting them against the church at Macedonia. That you can't gloss over that. Man, these guys were willing, and man, did they give, and they gave. And man, we hope you get the same, very same zeal that these guys got.
I'm going to go back to the King Jimmy for this verse 6 of chapter 9 of 2 Corinthians, because this is a verse, again, that we've all heard time and again. But this I say, he who sows sparingly shall reap also sparingly, and he that sows bountifully shall reap also bountifully. Every man, according as he purposes in his heart, so let him give, not grudgingly or of necessity, for God loves a cheerful giver.
Yeah.
You know, I used to say that to people. I'm saying it to you right now, Mr. Michael. Giving is better than receiving. So you go ahead and have a good time with me.
Let me go ahead and read verse 8. And God is able to make all grace abound toward you, that ye always, having all sufficiency in all things, is added there. Mm-hmm. And things is emphasized by Christianity. Things is not even in this translation, or not even in the Greek. May abound to every good work. So he's talking about, so what is the harvest here? The good harvest work is good works, right? Mm. Mm-hmm. So now remember back in 1 Corinthians chapter 9, Paul said, it's a small thing that if we sow spiritual things to you, we should reap carnal things from you. So here, to say that Paul is saying money reaps money in a spiritual way would be in contradiction with his statement at the first. He said spiritual things, we're doing spiritual things, it's obvious that ought to reap some financial consistency from you. And as they give, and folks, we say this all the time, if you sow bountifully, you will reap bountifully. We will see many more good works. Things abound, the grace of God will abound to many more good works. That's what the sowing in.
What goes around comes around.
Yeah. That is the sowing and reaping here. It doesn't have anything, and I know, gosh, I'd love to tell you if you give money to Mike Williams Ministries that you're going to get money back.
Tell them now. Quick, tell them. We might be doing better if you tell them that.
But what you are guaranteed to get back is your funds. It's just like the investment we're putting into the advertising there in Calgary. The return on the investment of your dollars is other people finding out they have equality, the very same motive that Paul had in receiving these gifts.
Now, I've been in Calgary with you, and Every Sunday morning you do a little ritual. On the Sunday morning of your Calgary sessions, you talk about where the gospel is going out around the world and what is being achieved. And I would have to say that compared with almost any other fellowship I've been involved with, these people are generous almost to a fault.
They are Macedonian in every way.
And they know because you put up a picture, some pictures. You put up maybe a video thing. I remember one year you did that. You tell people exactly how the gospel is affecting lives.
Yeah.
And that seemed, when you mentioned Calgary a minute ago, I thought, I was thinking Calgary before you, but for a different reason, but so true.
Oh, it is true. And that's why we encourage, that's what we encourage for. Folks, our heart is to get the gospel out. The reason we're going through this isn't even to provoke you to give more. We simply want you to know and make sure why you are giving.
You should give more just so that I live better. That's why you should give.
That'd take a lot of money.
Don't.
Praise the Lord and send me the money. I'm happy. You can be happy too if you praise the Lord and send me the money. That's what Jesus wants you to do.
So, again, in the process of this, I just, my heart wants to stop and say thanks to you guys all over again, and that we have the opportunity to read this with clarity, whether 1 Corinthians chapter 9, 2 Corinthians 8 and 9, and read to you and compare the reasons Paul was taking up funds and the reasons we're taking up funds. We're not trying to pretend to you that we're trying to take money up to give money away to people. Mm. That is not our motivation for doing this. Equality is our motivation. And the equality that we are looking for people to give, I think surpasses any other type of equality that anyone could have a desire to bring to the planet.
Now, he that ministers seed to the sower, both minister bread for your food and multiply your seed sown and increase the fruits of your righteousness. Now, that's interesting. We're talking about money. There are two other phrases that come up, good works and fruits of our righteousness.
Yeah. This is... This is righteous. What is the fruits of righteousness? It's righteousness. So all he's talking about here is to perpetuate the righteousness of God around the planet. And that's what we really are doing. We are perpetuating the righteousness of God. He said, the person that sows the seed that eventually turns into bread for food, and that multiplies the seed that is sown and increases. So what is the yield? The yield is not bread. The yield is good works and the fruits of righteousness. And then in verse 11, he says, being enriched in everything to all bountifulness, which causeth through us thanksgiving to God. He says, now what this all results in, and in verse 12, for the administration of this service not only supplieth the want of the saints, because I knew you was going to read that and say Christians again, but is abundant also by many thanksgivings unto God. So he's talking about this synergy that gets going, that this is supplying need in the area where he is receiving this. The return is the fruits of righteousness, the good works are growing, paying it forward, call it whatever you want to call it. They have different terms for it in modern day times. But this is what Paul is saying. And what results then is just people just become so thankful. Now, I don't know if you know the difference between being somebody who is grateful and thankful and being somebody who's ungrateful and unthankful. let me tell you something. I know all of you have been around both types of people, and I don't have to ask you without knowing what the response is. Would you rather be around thankful and grateful people or ungrateful, unthankful people?
As an ungrateful, unthankful person, I'd rather be around thankful, grateful people, frankly.
Even ungrateful, unthankful people don't want to be around ungrateful, unthankful people. So that's where this all results. And Don, we're going to finish up these next few verses. Why don't you take 13, 14, and 15?
This relief offering is a prod to live at your very best, showing your gratitude to God by being openly obedient to the plain meaning of the message of Christ. So what is happening here is the plain meaning of the message of Christ. Interesting. You show your gratitude through your generous offerings to your needy brothers and sisters. What does it say? What does it say in King Jimmy? Does it say saints?
Unto all, and men is italicized.
Unto all. Yes. Unto all, not just saints. Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, unto all.
And meanwhile, moved by the extravagance of God in your lives, they'll respond for praying for you in passionate intercession for whatever you need. I tell you what, if people gave into a ministry that I was called to participate in, I'd be praying for them too. I'd want them. Why wouldn't I pray for the people who have blessed me, so to speak? Thank God for this gift, his gift. No language can praise it enough.
Yeah. Now, let me read the King James here to you, because I think a little bit is lost in these verses in that translation.
Okay.
Whilst by the experiment of this ministration, they glorify God for your professed subjection unto the gospel of Christ, for your liberal distribution unto them and unto all, and by their prayer for you, which long after you, for the exceeding grace of God that is in you. Now, you see, even though these people were giving, the thing people longed for was the grace of God that was in folks. Man, we're seeing grace. We're seeing the manifestation of grace. And then Paul shows what this entire thing is all about. thanks be unto God for his unspeakable gift. So if you're going to talk about gifts, let's talk about the unspeakable gift of God's grace, God's equality upon the face of planet Earth. And this is the thing that we want you to understand and to know that we understand. We know why we do this. We know what our goals are. We express those goals to you. You respond if you like. We have people that are just very convinced that this is very needed, and therefore they support it financially. And the ones of us who work in it, compared to what we could have done, I got a phone call the other day from a lady that I prayed for in a prayer line up in Michigan. She's calling from L.A., had not seen me in 30 years.
Mm.
And called and said, I just don't know if this the Mike Williams that I'm trying to look for Michael Williams, and I don't know if you're him. Did you possibly speak at Dwayne Vanderklok's church in Michigan? And she was so excited about the possibility of finding Michael Williams that it took me a little while to respond and tell her, yes, I think I'm the Michael Williams you're looking for. Well, she was just ecstatic. She was ecstatic. I mean, she said, in my 40 years walk with the Lord. Now, I'm just going to tell you this story because I think it's important. In my 40-year walk with the Lord, nobody has ever, quote, carried the anointing like you did. You prayed for me and my friend 30 years ago, and we've never had an experience like that in the last 30 years. And she explained how the room was full. She explained how that the anointing was so powerful on me. I'm just telling you what she was saying. And that everybody experienced it. And so I'm thanking her for her comments and just wondering in my head, how do I get this picture to work now? You know, what do I say to her? I did have someone waiting for me that I had to go with for a schedule that we had to keep. And so I told her, I said, you know, I called her by name and I said, you know, I thank you so much for the call. But I do have to go. And she says, well, I do know you got to go. I'm just so glad I found you. And she says, could I ask you something just before you go? And I said, yeah, and you can call back anytime. And she said, do you still pray over people with that heavy anointing that you had in that altar call? Now, Don, I had no clue what was going to come out of my mouth. Just stop and think, how would you answer that? What would you say to somebody?
Mm-mm.
I opened my mouth and this is what came out. I told her, I said, hun, it's been years since I have prayed over people standing in a line in a prayer line. Really? Well, Brother Mike, why? And I said, I think what it is that I found out that everything that we were trying to minister to you by praying over you, I found out you already had all of this inside of you anyway. So I am trying to teach people now to access what they need from inside rather than trying to find it through an altar call or somebody else praying for them outside. Oh, I believe that. I believe that. I mean, she was as excited about this as she was about being prayed for 30 years ago.
Wow.
But, man, I hung up the phone and I felt like Solomon, to tell you the truth, that I had no clue how I was going to answer this question. If you don't, man, and the way she described it and what happened to her, anybody in their right mind would have never given up doing this. Because this place was full, Don, and the money was rolling in like crazy.
Mm.
It was rolling in like crazy.
How much a week were you making back then, mate?
Oh, my goodness. I don't remember, but I know that there were times just in tape sales. Just in tape sales over a weekend, we'd have $25,000, $30,000 just in sales of tapes.
Golly.
Out at the table. That didn't count the offerings and everything else that came in. But, folks, and the reason that I mentioned that is, you know, this gospel means something. Could I still be doing what there's no reason I could not still be doing exactly what I was doing. And you see, the prosperity message at that time was just beginning to take off really full throttle. There were no mega churches at that time. There might have been one or two that were already living in very wealthy mansions, millions, multiple million-dollar mansions and things like that, and flying jet airplanes, multiple jet airplanes, and claiming that it was all a scriptural way to live, as Kenneth Copeland responded to a newspaper at one of his meetings and then brushed them off and was carried out of the room. Could I be doing that? I could still be doing that. I wouldn't be living in a double wide in South Florida. Life would be quite different for me, but it wouldn't be the life that I wanted. The life I want is the one I've got, regardless of how difficult this ever becomes or has been. It's been much worse financially than what it is now. We almost feel like we're rolling in the dough just because we can pay the bills and clear things up. About once a quarter, things get cleared up. We've got a savings account going. I think the ministry now has about...
You sure you want to say?
Yeah, I think the ministry's got about $1,300 in savings account right now. And that was from the encouragement of one of our very strong supporters that loves the gospel. And just like Paul was giving this church managerial advice about their giving, I received managerial advice. And I said, you know, this is somebody that cares about me, loves ministry. So I don't see how I can start a savings account, but I did. And we started putting some away. And it was recommended that we should have at least $20,000 set aside for emergencies. So that's the goal. Now, that fund only right now only gets $300 a month, but it's, you know, over time we'll eventually have that. Mm-hmm. If we have a little, if we have more, we'll kick more into it. But, and I, you know, I share all of that with you to say that there's been this magnificent change. Yes, I could have still been the go-between man between God and people standing in an altar, between God and people, trying to be healed, between God and people trying to prosper. But this whole ministry changed, folks, as they started understanding the grace of God. And being convinced that everything you need is inside you. My goal now, instead of praying for you to get something into you you don't have, is to teach you to get something out of you for your own benefit and those around you that you already have.
And so it is that we must leave you, family and friends. If you'd like to partner with us, and not just in money, call our office on
832-318-9339.
And speak to us about how you want to participate, or go to www.gospelrevolution.com and hit the connect link. Anything you can do to help the gospel can make all the difference for somebody else just like you, starting their own journey towards thinking for themselves. If you have any questions, feel free to record them on United States number 123456-40971. And remember, in the words of Mike Turi, we don't give God glory. We are God's glory. So now it's good night from myself, Don Bartle, from the GR Studios right here in Eva, Alabama.
And it's good night from Michael Williams. We appreciate you guys. I hope that we have shown reasonable amount of thankfulness. I'm telling you, this has grown into many thanksgivings to God around the planet. And every time I hear people telling me how thankful they are that have received the gospel, and many are receiving now that have never heard the gospel before, been in church all their lives, and they admit they've never heard the gospel before. We are reaching a lot of Word of Faith, charismatic people from the era that Don and I and Glenn and many of us were in. They're rolling in just by the wave. A pastor in Calgary, Alberta, that was a part of me being released from ministry in churches in Calgary, Alberta, is now coming on board with the gospel. It is powerful. So powerful. We've been going back to Calgary. He's maintained his church there for 20 years and now is sitting down and having conversations with people that are in charge of the meetings up there and is discussing the gospel and is absolutely blown away by what he's continuing to hear now. So we got another pastor online here. We're not going to release any names, but it's exciting. This reaches back into our past and brings someone along who soundly closed the door over 20 years ago.
We hope you enjoyed today's PowerCast, but if you didn't, remember, just because you're offended does not mean you're right. So if you prefer learning how to think to being told what to think, join us again next week, same time, same channel, where we'll do the same thing all over again.
Better.